So, good evening. I think you do much better than that. Good evening. See, that's what I'm talking about. So yeah, this is really happening, folks. I was a little shocked too. I honestly thought when I got the phone call they were going to say, "Hey, we need you to do the high school group one more year." So this was sort of like a relief. It was like, "Oh." So we're going to do this. You'll figure out pretty quickly that my style is a little different than Barbara's, which is perfectly okay, right? We're talking about different voices in her banquet choir. Mine is distinctly different than hers. Kind of a quick example. She produced for me the title of all of her talks for the rest of the week. I know what time I'm supposed to be here for the rest of the week. So we're that far down the path. Which doesn't mean I haven't tried. It doesn't mean I'm not prepared. I feel fully prepared. And in fact, I tried to force some things back in January. I started writing kind of New Year's Eve, New Year's Day. I sat down and I had this goal. I was going to write real talks. These were going to be legitimate. I was going to like practice them in front of the mirror. And I was going to do uniforms. Like I could wear this shirt on this day. And yeah, no. It's just not me. I like to say, I'm extemporaneous. Elvie said, "You're going to ad lib all week." It's kind of the same thing. But with that, I do think that I have some things to say that are not necessarily my things, but I think that I'm able to channel a few things. We're going to talk a little bit of history tonight. We're going to do a little introduction, kind of the standard issue introduction talk. I've heard a couple of these over the years. I think you have too. I can tell you that, I went to the seminary of nowhere. I'm not going to sing to you, right? We get a lot of speakers that have sort of this musical influence. I'm working on getting some pie for Earl Rainey so he'll stay. And so I've given two talks now, and both of them within the first 90 seconds I've talked about Earl Rainey. So there's a theme there. But just save the last dance for me, Earl. So let's kind of maybe try to be a little serious for a second. So if you just be still with me for a moment. O blessed Christ, enter and fill me. Take control of this camp, this night, and every area of my life. My heart is yours. All that I have is yours. Take me. Use me. Lead me where you will. We have no fear as long as you are our guide. Amen. So, one of the things that I do is make my page down too far, all right? One of the things I do is I teach a leadership course. I am, among other things in this world, I am an EMT in the Commonwealth of Virginia. My sister. It's a fun thing to do, but as an aside, and what I've figured out with that is I do a lot of teaching. Which to me ultimately is more fun. I'm a proctor so you're going to learn a lot of terms this week because there are a lot of things I can't tell you without some background, right? So conceptually, we have ALS and BLS, basic life support, advanced life support. So I help teach these basic life support academies, which is sort of an entry-level emergency medical technician position. And one of the things that I do as part of that process is teach leadership. And I loved this, and I talk about it all of the time, and it makes me feel very winny even as I am teaching this. So out of the book, there's a definition in this leadership book that we use. Communication, it's a two-way process of reaching mutual understanding in which participants not only exchange, encode and decode, information, news, ideas, and feelings, but also create and share meaning. In general, communication is a means of connecting people or places. And the first time I read that definition, I kind of got goosebumps. right? I was like, that's prayer, right? That's community. But at its very essence, it's communication. And that's what I hope to do this week, is share meaning and help us come to some mutual understanding. Now, that said, I fully subscribe to the leave it principle, although I was going to phrase it as flush early and often. I think that there is definitely some antique plumbing, right? So, you know, truth be told, I do have a goal to not be offensive this week. You know, the real goal is to get out of here without, you know, swearing all week. Although several people I've said that to were just like, yeah, go ahead, do it. So maybe. But as I said, I've been preparing for this since January, running through things. You already have fulfilled, or not fulfilled, my worst nightmare. About March, I had one of those go to school without your pants on dreams. When I got up here and there was nobody here. It was like an empty room. The good news is I gave a wicked good talk. There was just there was nobody here to hear it. So just the fact that you all are here is for me kind of a good jumping off point. So before we get too deep into this, here's kind of the spoiler alert. The more I've gone through this in my head and gone over it and over it and not practiced in front of the mirror, several things were driven home to me. One, I love that the tone that the camp has had this week, because I think it fulfills this. I will say this, and I mean it in a very specific sense. You can go a lot of places and go to Jesus camp, right? Lots and lots of places, lots and lots of different forms, lots of different franchises that will bring that to you. Right, and I'm not trying to subtract Jesus from this experience. I understand that that's essential, but for me, Glenn Clark is the treasurer of this camp, and it is that sort of process and those writings that really, really bring this home and make this different. Right, so I'm going to talk a lot about Glenn Clark this week, if that's okay with everybody. The other thing I'm going to talk a little bit about, maybe a lot about, is prayer. Specifically, my journey to pray without ceasing. One of the things that I need to say early on, and we'll lay a few ground rules tonight, but one of the things that for sure, for me, is I'm theologically a bit of a simpleton. I like to read, I like to process things, you know, I can start to think and run through things with the best of them, well, maybe not the best of them, but at least like the second tier of them. But I like very simple things. I like things that I can latch onto. And for me, that ties back to Glenn Clark, because I think in the sort of the original readings in these, you know, one of the very first talks I saw in the inn in 1983 was this lady talking about hinds feet. And I had no idea what she was talking about. That was like this completely new concept to me. I didn't even know what a hind was. And sadly, I couldn't Google it on my phone while she was talking, you know? So that sat with me until I kind of got my hands on I Will Lift Up Mine Eyes and started to put some of these things together. But then you start to get into Glenn's talking about sort of through the lens of the Lord's Prayer, through the lens of the 23rd Psalm, the lens of the Sermon on the Mount, right? And it really simplified a lot of things for me and gave me places that I could hook in. And for me, sort of that final tipping point was the 9 o'clock prayer. You're going to hear about that in several instances, and that becomes a theme in several of my stories, because that has become for me this sort of quintessential prayer. Right? Your will, not my will. Let there be peace. Let me be part of the solution to that peace. Right? Which is my final sort of theme, and this is the big spoiler of the week, and this tags off of right what we were talking about this morning. It is about service. Right? If you are not part of the solution, you are part of the problem. Right? And as I look around at our neighborhoods, at our communities, in our world, to me, that is the biggest thing that's wrong. we think that we can go onto the Facebook and post something and we feel better about it and we think we've done something. But the fact of the matter is we haven't. And as much as we write, as much as we talk, if we are not doing, we are not fulfilling what I believe is the mission and our purpose for being here, right? Is to help one another, is to be there for one another, is to serve far more than we are serviced, right? So as we roll through the week, you're going to hear some Glenn Clark, you're going to hear some prayer, right? Especially I hope to introduce you to this concept of visceral prayer and how I discovered visceral prayer and what that means to me. And then we're definitely going to talk about being part of the solution and ways that I hope I'm part of the solution, ways that I hope that you can sort of go forth and be part of the solution. So what that sort of evolves into, for those of you taking notes, I see a lot of you, so that's cool. Just kidding. But if you were taking notes, at this point you could write down, simple, digestible, meaningful. Right? That is what philosophically and spiritually has become important to me, right? Simple, digestible, meaningful. So things that I can take, things that I can take in, things that I can hold and repeat, because to me, that's where it falls apart over and over and over again. So here's another quick thing. I'll do this a lot this week. Well, everybody here is a sinner, right? Okay. Just checking, because I'm a sinner. And to deflect, a lot of times I will say you when I mean me, right? You know what I mean? I'll say things like, well, you know when you, and what I'm really saying is, that's how I feel, right? That's something that I do. So don't feel like I'm being accusatory. You don't have to own that. If it's not you, if it's not something that touches you, flush early and often, and remind yourself that it's really about me. And I'm cool with that. Sometimes I can't admit to it, but I genuinely am cool with that. So, ultimately, it's this path of getting to consistent prayer before it's necessary. We were talking in prayer group today about sort of this list-based prayer, and I can remember early prayers, you know, and it sort of starts with this, now I lay me down to sleep, and God bless mommy and daddy and the dog and, you know, whomever. You build out this list, and we evolve, and we enter this period of, you know, dear God, I need to pay the phone bill next week, and it's $67.82. Chop, chop. Right? And so we sort of move through these sort of phases of prayer. And have you ever prayed way later than you should? You know, it's sort of like after you have exhausted all other possibilities, you have worked through every other potential solution, you finally say, okay. So, in that spirit, let's do something real quick for me. Indulge me. We talked about this in prayer group today, too, which is just a little foreshadowing of this. Soul Sincere Desire, familiar with it? Right? Good book. Glenn Clark in there talks about the single word prayers. And a member of his prayer group that when they weren't there, he could feel the difference. He could feel that they were being less effective and less impactful. So what I'd like to do is I'd like to just pause for a moment. I'd like to close our eyes and pick out the person in front of you and don't call them by name. Don't pray for them. Just think about peace and the person in front of you. Just peace. One simple word. And then move to the person to your left. And the person to your right. And the person behind you. And take a deep breath. Hold it. And exhale peace. I don't think that prayer has to be more complicated than that. And we'll talk about ways that I try to add that ritual, that routine into my life. But in a nutshell, that's where my prayer life is right now. Now, it's not always peace. I rotate through different words. I try to build my vocabulary. But that's where we are, where I am, right? See, I did it. I said we. I meant me, right? So that's where I am. But how did we get here? So CFO, the first camp was when? Not my first camp. My first camp was 1983. When was the first CFO camp? 1930, right? Where? Where? Coronas, yeah, Minnesota, right? So started, right? It was about 7 years in the making, right? From the time that Glenn had the thought for the stout. Took about 7 years to get that first camp officially off the ground. How long was it? 3 weeks, right? Could you imagine doing this for 3 weeks, right? Now, it does say in the book, in the history, not everybody stayed for 3 weeks. There were people that just came in on the weekend. I tend to hear that, and I think, God, they didn't have anything to do in 1930. But the fact of the matter is, not everybody stayed for the whole 3 weeks, right? And so from that camp, 2 years later, after the fourth Coronas camp in 1933, the call for camp was different. Glenn was invited by Dr. and Mrs. Arthur Holt of Chicago, who had attended Coronas, to come to their summer place at Georgetown, Maine. He was to come to talk for several days to friends in their summer community, many of whom were members and teachers at Union Theological Seminary of New York City and other outstanding Eastern institutions. This was truly significant. They asked Glenn to come and hold a full-fledged CFO at Harpswell, Maine. Where's that? Harpswell, Maine. Anybody? Near on the ocean?
It's a peninsula down here.
Okay, peninsula. So like down East Maine? Is that what you call it?
No.
No? Okay, I'll Google it. So they held a full-fledged CFO at Harpswell, Maine, the following year. I love this line. I like did a double highlight on it. From its very beginning, this proved to be a strong camp. So strong that they moved to Star Island of the Isle of Shoals for more room the next year. They remained there until the war drove them off to Lake Winnipesaukee in New Hampshire in 1942, where they still meet. They is us in this particular case, right? From its very beginning, this has proved to be a strong camp, right? So make no mistake about it. This is a very early camp and in a very amazing group of individuals that have routed through and all of us collectively taken this journey farther out, right? Deeper into prayer, deeper into God. So we continue to track through that history. Anybody notice this podium? Where's this podium from? So Saturday. Is that yesterday already? It feels like we've been here like a month already. So yesterday, we're sitting here, and I'm chatting with Dana, and in come these two burly men carrying this podium. And I kind of looked at Dana, and he was like, I wish I could do like a good Dana voice, but I can't. I'll have to work on that. But he said, yeah, I wanted a connection to the chapel. So they came, and the, you know, circa 2001 podium that was sitting here, they whisked away and brought this in. So here's the deal, right? You look at this, and this is all rubbed away on this side, right? You know who rubbed this away? Glenn Clark. Right? Glenn Clark stood behind this podium. right? Tommy Tyson stood behind this podium. Bert Curley. Who else? Shout him out. Somebody say Marsha Brown, too? Frank Laubach, Star Daly, Agnes Sanford, Joyce Carol, right? This one piece of wood, or I guess it's more than one. It wasn't carved out of a single piece of wood, but that'd be pretty cool, but I don't think so. There are nails. But I don't even know how that makes me feel, right? To touch something that Glenn Clark touched, and to be behind this, right? So let's not ever lose that. Let's not ever forget that no matter what path we wind down, we have a very long and storied history here and something that we should be proud of. I told you I started in 1983. Been coming more or less ever since. I missed 1 year and another part of a year when my work wouldn't let me. So I came out of jealousy. I think I told the story at my lamplighter. You know, I met my wife because of CFO, because her parents chose to keep her out of school the first day of school. And so I got to watch her walk to the, we had the same homeroom class, and I got to watch her walk to the front of the room and turn in her note for being late and missing the first day of school, and I thought, oh, she's pretty cute. Right? So at that very seed, right, that very start, Winnie CFO, which I didn't know from Adam, had set me down a path. Right? And so it became this thing. She'd talk about it. And I was like, it honestly, you know, it didn't sound that interesting. If I were to be blunt, you know, I was a 15-year-old guy, and I remember her trying to describe rhythms to me. Though, as she described it, she sort of ended with, "But we don't usually do that." So I felt a little better. But I knew that in previous years she'd kind of had a boyfriend up here, and there's no finer point that you can put on it than to say I was jealous, right? So my seeds in Winnie and CFO were planted 100% out of jealousy, right? 100%, right? But this gets back to that sort of that concept of the divine plan. Most of us, I think, agree that the divine plan is a thing, right? That we are sent places, and kind of getting back to those little things that I can latch onto. I had a divine plan my entire life, right? I never knew it, but it was my mother saying, "Well, everything happens for the best." Oh, Mom, shut up. It doesn't. It's you know, this is terrible. My life is over. Well, everything happens for the best. But that's the divine plan, right? Am I wrong? Right? Everything happens for the best. That's like seven paragraphs condensed to one sentence. Go, Mom. Right? So I kind of start to have some of these wheels spinning, and I think, well, I'm not going to let her go up there with all these, you know, crazy Christian high school stud guys that are up in New Hampshire. And so I came. Right? That was interesting, right? Maybe that's a side story, but, you know, she didn't ride up with me. She had gone to Maine to visit friends before camp, so that's when I got to become friends with Sharon and Steven. Anybody see the original National Lampoon movie? Like the family truckster? Like the Crawls owned the family truckster. It was this big, obnoxious, green station wagon, and Ken and Elizabeth were in their little Toyota, and Sharon and Steven and I were in this family truckster. The air conditioning was 100% functional, but Steve wouldn't turn it on. We got stuck at the Tappan Zee Bridge for like 2.5 hours. The very first time I met Ann and Don and stayed at their house, there's no Susan. I'm just this weird kid tagging along. You know, playing computer games in their basement, playing with Uncle Don's trains, went to Peterborough, is that right? Peterborough, New Hampshire, is that where Grace lived? Peterborough, no S, Peterborough, near Concord, right? And stayed at her house and watched my grandmother drink hot water for the first time, or my grandmother, my mother-in-law, I mean, which I, you know, was particularly weird. I now know that she does that. She sometimes just drinks hot water. But I thought it was a little bizarre. But eventually we wind our way up here, and bam, into somebody else's family reunion. Have you ever been to somebody else's family reunion? And even better, at that time, Ken Crawl was the chairman. So at that point, well, we got here Friday night, right, Elizabeth? We got here actually a full night before camp started. And they started having meetings that night, and it was a whole thing. And my first trip to JoJo's, Sharon and I walked to JoJo's. We walked around the lake. I met Gregory Harrison, right? Does anybody remember the sneakers? Right? So, oh, yeah, that was interesting. But met Gregory Harrison for the first time. Still no Susan. They're not coming until the next day. But that's where it began. Right, so was that some 35 years ago almost? Is my 35th camp? So even then, God was working on me. I was a bit of a punk, I guess. I wish Gina Gloria was here to tell you, like, J. Kerr punk stories. I didn't mean any harm. Like, I wasn't, like, a thug or terrible. I just wasn't that interested in God. And at that point, some of you will remember, the high school group was 60 people. Right, 60 youth. We had almost at that point 400 people in camp in total. We took up the entire fireside and lakeside dining room. We took up everything. Right, and it was crazy. But you had Greg Harrison and David Purdy and Gina Glorio. And I think at that point, Jonathan, you were helping with that youth group at that time. And I know eventually you got into, like, young adult, the college and careers group. But early on, you were at least doing prayer groups. Carol, I met, I think, was my very first prayer group leader. Fran Ruffin, right? But it was this big, crazy group. And all the Worcester kids, you remember all the Worcester kids? Greg Harrison would bring up, you know, 10 or 12 or 107 kids from Worcester. And so that was kind of my first camp, right? I also got to meet Georgie Gamble, right? Yeah, see, you guys know, you're jumping ahead in the story. That year, Ken came to me and said, hey, we have extra scholarship money. Would you like your camp money back? Duh, yeah, of course. What does that mean? Well, you've got to help out. So I'm thinking, cool, you know, I'll pick up cigarette butts on the street or pull weeds or something. No. They put me in to assist in Georgie Gamble's first grade class. I assure you I was not qualified for that. Or I didn't feel qualified. God saw to it. And we made it through, and Georgie became a dear friend. What is an acrostic? Is that when you take the first letter, right? So just about every Christmas, I don't think she just did that for me, right? Did she do that for other people? Like she'd send you the acrostic with these little poems with your first letters of your names, and such a beautiful soul, right? And so already this is starting to work on me. I think that that's also that first camp. You know, sort of walking around, I think it's fair to say this, right? Like, other than my direct grandparents or, like, direct sort of old people in my life, these were some of the first sort of old people that I met, right? Does that sound horrible? I guess it does sound a little horrible. It's supposed to sound wonderful and uplifting and be a testament to what a wonderful place this is. But I would not, you know, I wouldn't have, like, walked up and talked to Greg or Georgie Gamble or it just, you know, Bob Spencer. I met Bob Spencer that year because he would hang out in the balcony doing tapes. And it was transforming. I didn't know it yet, right? This is that sort of divine plan stuff that you look back on and you go, oh, I get it. Mom wasn't so dumb, right? Everything does happen for the best, like at least so far, right? So that's where I kind of began my CFO experience, right? Which was really, in a lot of ways, the beginning of my spirituality. I had a few role models. We'll talk about some of that going deeper into the week. But to that point, I'd really had kind of a punch-the-clock Christianity, kind of go to church on Sunday. It wasn't, you know, not a lot of prayer, not a lot of sort of anything I would call deeply spiritual, at least if it was there, and maybe it was sort of surrounding me and I was successful ignoring it. But I really began here to walk down this path. Now, I talk about some of those examples, and again, I think some of these things I talked a little bit in my Lamplighter a few years ago, but I had very... So if you picture life as a bell curve, right? I had sets of grandparents that were at the far ends of both of the bell curve, sort of socioeconomically. I had my father's dad that was a retired colonel in the Army. He just passed away on Christmas. It was 96, Mom, is that 96 years old? Served in World War II in Korea and was a kind of, you know, a genuine bad dude. He was a good guy, but sort of well off, right? Certainly upper middle class. Then I had Nana and Pop Pop on the other side that literally, you know, I didn't think of it as really a shanty, but it was a four-room house. Now, I don't mean like four-bedroom, 3,000-square-foot house. I mean it was four rooms. It was a kitchen and a bedroom and a bedroom and a living room, and it was just this little... you know, cedar shake shingled shack, and was, you know, 150 yards from where my Nana was born, and they lived in this block in Elkridge, Maryland, Howard County, Maryland, and looking back at it, I liked them a lot more. Right, that's the, you know, one of the kind of those first lessons that I started to take away that, you know, it's not. Now I didn't. I mean, they bought me stuff. There was always, you know, food, and I didn't know anybody was poor. Right, but I knew, like, they didn't even have indoor plumbing until my mother was, what, 8 or 9? 12? Yeah, it's even worse than I thought. Right? Because there are, like, pictures of her, like, taking her Saturday bath in the big turkey pan, you know, in the middle of the room. It's like in the olden days, kids, right? The olden days. But I had that. I had that influence. Right, watching these sort of different worlds. I had scouting, right? It's interesting, and we'll definitely devote a whole night to sort of my scouting journey, because I started that as a youth, as most do. I started as a Cub Scout, evolved into Boy Scouting. But that is where I began to really take on this bite-sized theology, right? Because scouting is a place that... as a sort of a code of ethics and a morals system, it's very easy to get your hands around. You know, a scout is trustworthy, loyal, helpful, friendly, courteous, kind, obedient, cheerful, thrifty, brave, clean, and reverent. Right? It's just that simple. Oh, don't be that impressed. I just stopped being a scoutmaster like a year and a half ago. So, but it's funny because you'll find that people do remember that. You know, I was at a business meeting one time introducing myself, and I mentioned that, you know, I was a scoutmaster, and so by definition, I was trustworthy. I started reeling it off, and like three other people at the table joined in, right? Because they burn it into our heads, I guess. Maybe we're being brainwashed, maybe. But it was fabulous for me, my scout experience, right? I was always a bright kid. I was always a funny kid, not terribly athletic. I was sort of the chubby kid. Not in this crazy, morbidly obese way, but I wasn't like, you know, Joe baseball star, Jimmy football star. And scouting was the first place that sort of reached out and met me where I was, right, and allowed me to do things I wanted to do, like light stuff on fire and pee on trees and tie things up. You know, like a piece of rope and a pocket knife and permission to pee outdoors when you're 10 and a half years old. That's powerful. But it was very uplifting to me. It's where I learned leadership. You know, one of the funny stories I tell, and I know I would have learned this at another point, but I became a senior patrol leader in my Boy Scout troop as a youth. And my scoutmaster showed me how to do a meeting, right? This is sort of the basic meeting agenda that we all use, and kind of the old business, new business, and, you know, agenda items and minutes. But I learned that in Boy Scouts, right? Still uses the same basic template to run a meeting as a manager now. I learned how to flip a pancake. I learned some first aid. I learned how to talk people into doing things. I learned how to lead by example. It was a phenomenal experience for me, marred by one disappointment, but we'll talk about that later, my youth experience. So scouting, CFO, how did I say here, planted in jealousy, watered with love. That's so nice. Such a good note writer. So we talked a little bit about my family. You've met my wife, you've met my mother, both of whom are sitting over here. Two of my children are there, one's in the back, right? We are sort of an all-in Winnie family at this point, which I cherish. I would say that if you look around at children that are raised at Winnie CFO, they are better. You know, tell me if I'm wrong, but what's the Lake Wobegon? They're all good looking, above average, and how's it go? Nobody can do. There you go. Thank you, John. I should have gone right to you to begin with. Right. So I think they are, you know, above average and good looking, and this is a great environment for young people. And so this has been, to me, an essential element in my parenting in that journey. And I will tell you that of all of the things that I know, whatever flaws there are in my marriage, it was not our parenting style. We were absolutely brought together to raise children together. Our gut reactions, our answers, our process was nearly identical. And the beauty of never having to worry about what the mother of my children was doing when I was trying to do something else was a tremendously useful thing. And it's purely accidental from my perspective, right? This is all divine plan stuff sort of beginning to stack up. But there's zero question that we were brought together to raise children, and I think they turned out pretty well, mostly. So far. They don't bring enough pie. So, my career. I am currently a network operations center manager, though I don't have anybody to manage yet. I'm at a company that's about 6,000 employees, but only now making the transition from kind of mom and pop to enterprise level systems. So I was brought in to build a network operations center, which is we just monitor things and react to things and try to keep things up. Generally, this would fall under the banner of information technology, if I've lost you already. I think Ian gets it, David. There's like a handful of people that get it. But I do computer stuff. I try to stay out of the way mostly. Because that's really the job of IT, is to not be noticed, right? Is just to have stuff run, have it work. So that's what I do. Here's a funny thing, though. So that seed was planted. Anybody want to guess? Winnie CFO. Yeah, so how this went down. I'd always been good with computers. Like, you know, even when I delivered pizzas, I was the guy that they'd call in during the day shift to clean up the terminals, these old RS-232 terminals and, you know, VT-100, you know, connections. And I was always sort of good at that and could do stuff, but I never, you know, I was still making money delivering pizzas or whatever. That wasn't really my thing. And ended up working at the local PBS station, WHRO Channel 15. I told you earlier tonight, Ken was my boss there. That's where he worked for as the vice president for a few decades. And so I ended up there doing television production and then working in master control, which sounds way cooler than it is. But I got to put a lot of stuff on TV. I got to watch a lot of TV in master control. That's not bad. I think I saw every episode of New Yankee Workshop and This Old House and more Barneys than I care to admit to. But I was there at this right time, and I was there at this technology was rapidly advancing. And so in the sort of meantime, we were up here at camp one year, and I think Arden was secretary at the time. And I was nearby when LV said, "Hey, could we get a box for our email addresses on the roster?" And Arden was kind of like, "What?" Right? But it happened. There's LV's email address. And I went home and I was like, "Well, LV's pretty cool. I want an email address." So I went home and I got two. I got two email addresses. This is in an age, it wasn't even instant delivery, right? This was FidoNet, and it would do a mail dump, and you would learn your cycle. So every 4 hours, it would come pick up all of the email and move it on to the next location, right? But it was a real email address, right? So the short of that story is once I got those email addresses at WHRO, I started working on their networks. And I was doing it for fun and having a good time with it. And one day they said, "Hey, you're pretty good at that. We need to start an IT department. Would you like to be part of that?" Absolutely. Right? Some 24, 23 years later, that's what I do. Right? Divine plan. Right? A seed planted right here because I wanted to talk about stupid stuff with LV. Right? Legitimately, because we didn't have a whole lot of high-level conversations over email. Not terribly lowbrow either, but it was not, you know, not there. So last thing, because we're running out of time, imagine that. I am also now currently a first responder. We talked about that a little bit at the beginning. I became an EMT. It's actually been a lifelong dream of mine, and just like scouting, we will spend at least one entire evening talking about this process. Ultimately, I've wanted to do it since I was 15. My mother was an emergency room nurse for almost 40 years. She corrected me the other day. It's not a full 40. I think 40 sounds better. She has a problem with it, so almost 40. And ultimately, I was looking for first aid training for the other adults in my scout troop. When a bunch of rescue squad sites came up, and I thought, you know what, I could probably do this now. And then Sandy Hook happened, right? Everybody remember the Sandy Hook shootings? And that was sort of the tipping point for me, where I said, you know what, I'm not just going to go on Facebook and be like, this sucks, this is terrible, everybody's awful, we need mental health, control guns. I can't be there for those kids and those teachers, but maybe I can do something for the next batch, right? So those are kind of the stories we're going to take you through this week. Again, this has led me to this kind of process of visceral prayer that we'll go into a little bit deeper. And we'll talk about sort of finding God's will, because I think that is one of the big missing pieces. And then we'll talk about sort of pushing on, right? Some ways, I didn't know whether to be complimented or insulted, but about a couple months ago, early April, we were out to dinner with my dad, and he said to one of his friends that I was a late bloomer. I didn't know to be happy that he thought I'd bloomed, or upset that he thought I didn't bloom fast enough. But we'll talk about that too. So Everybody stand up for me, please. We'll go ahead and close this with a prayer. Please repeat after me, if you would. Oh, blessed Christ. Enter and fill me. Take control of this camp. Take control of this night. Take control of every area of my life. My heart is yours. All that I have is yours. Take me. Use me. Lead me where you will. I have no fear as long as you are my guide. Amen. Now remain standing and take hands. We are about 30 seconds from the 9 o'clock moment. All my family who said I wouldn't end on time, ha! I did have at least an hour's worth of material left, but...
That's beside the point. To join the neighbor's hand, the best prayer of all. Sorry, I saw the phone book.
Thy kingdom.